Well, hello, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Surviving Empathy. I will be your host, Brian Russell of Chef Bri Comedy. And today I have my beautiful wife, Rebecca, and we are going to talk about the spirit of compassion and kindness. Because I think, you know, we're living in a world that's growing so big and so sophisticated. Sometimes, you know, we're talked into bad traits. We're talked into and glamored by bad attitudes. And sometimes, just to protect ourselves, we detach ourselves from our humanity temporarily. And I want to talk all about the spirit of kindness and compassion, where that comes from. First, we will be talking about the difference between compassion and empathy. And then we're going to tell you an article that we read that uses the acronym compassion and all these different things that we can do to be a kinder and more generous and more loving person. And it's really good advice, too. And then at the end, we will talk about an absence of moral leaders and moral leadership in our society and how we must step into those roles and live through example. And at the end of the day, we have to become the change in this world. And then finally, we're going to talk about watching out for false prophets. There are people in this world, some with good intentions, some just want to be validated. But at the end of the day, we have to be careful who we trust and who we follow and what example we learn from when we are glamored, if you will, by people with perhaps not always the best of intentions. Maybe they're out for ego. Maybe they're out for greed. Maybe they're out to, you know, get wealthy or whatever. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with success. But we have to be careful, especially when we're talking about the supernatural, the healing powers of things, that some people call themselves masters of it. And so I want to kind of tell you guys the difference and how to differentiate the difference between a master of something and to give reverence when respect is due, but then when there are times where sometimes people can sort of trick us into thinking that there's a hierarchical structure there when there isn't. So we'll go into all of that at the end, but this is a long one, you guys. Grab yourself something to eat. Grab yourself something to drink. Get comfortable, you guys, but we're going to talk all about the spirit of kindness and compassion, what you can do to really, really not just have it when you want it, but have it even when you're having bad days, to inhabit the spirit of goodness and kindness and compassion and hope just as your daily life, rather than it's not something that will take a lot of practice. You'll just have it inherently. That's what we're trying to do here. So get ready and get yourself something to drink and eat, and let's begin. Well, hello again, folks. Welcome to another episode of Surviving Empathy. I will be your host, Brian Russell of Chef Bri Comedy. And as usual, you can always reach me mostly on Instagram, but a little bit on Twitter and sometimes on Facebook at Chef Bri Comedy, or simply search Surviving Empathy Podcast. And today, I have my beautiful wife, Rebecca, and she's going to be co-hosting with me today. Please say hi to the folks.
Hello, everyone.
So today's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is the spirit of compassion. And I have all these little kind of side topics, if you will, that all sort of intermingle and interrelate to that. But the show basically is about compassion. What is compassion? And most people, when they think of compassion, you know, they think of, you know, empathy towards others. But there's actually a difference, and I want to kind of go into that real quick here. Okay, so the essential difference is this. Okay, so let me just start at the very beginning and just kind of go over the dictionary's version of compassion. That is sympathetic pity and concern for the suffering and misfortunes of others. Pretty yeah. Self-explanatory yeah. there. But then it says here, there's a better definition. That is, compassion literally means to suffer together. Among emotion researchers, it is defined as the feeling that arises when you are confronted with another's suffering and feel motivated to feel that suffering. Okay, so remember that. Here we have this. There's a compassion and empathy are fundamentally different but closely related. Empathy is in Empathy is our feeling of awareness towards other people and emotions and an attempt to understand how they feel, whereas compassion is an emotional response to empathy or sympathy and creates a desire to help. So yes. Do you see that difference there? Yeah.
So empathy is sensing the feeling.
Compassion the awareness of it or a sensation of it, right.
Compassion is understanding compassion is, it. And
is to understand it and, to it and like a... almost a physical attempt to do something about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I named my show Surviving Empathy, and that is because I wanted people to understand that, yes, this show is about people who have empathy, trying to survive in a world that often does not have empathy, but also to surviving empathy is almost like a root word for empathicness. So it's being an empath, but it's also being, you know, simply empathetic towards people and having empathy. So, but in reality, what I should have made the show is surviving empathy with compassion. Because then you're not just thinking about it, you're actually doing something about it. There's an action to be taken there. See what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what the show's all about, and that's what we're all about is. But that's what I wanted. I wanted to dive into the spirit of empathy and compassion, because I think we often use language without really understanding what...
All the time.
What we're really talking about, what we're really thinking about. And language is a fascinating thing, but... Sometimes, like, I've said some things to, like, my mom, for example, you know, just as a matter of fact, and then she'll take offense to it. I'm like, what? And then I'll realize that it's a common phraseology that people use to undermine someone else's feelings. And I went, no, I meant it literally. I didn't mean to, I wasn't being fascistic. I wasn't being facetious. I was being literal. Okay. So sometimes there are certain terms that we get so used to them being comebacks or put downs. That when you are saying it, you're not intending to insult somebody, but then they take it as such, you know. But anyway, so I've got a few things here. I collected a few memes on the interweb, and I want to use those as examples here. Because I think at the end of the day, what we here at the show are trying to teach people, especially empaths, But anybody really in general, is that we're trying to get people to understand and step up to their personal responsibility of awareness toward kindness. Because we live in a world where, you know, there's a lot of people out there who I would not say are sociopaths or bad people, who are just simply either indifferent or maybe slightly callous or slightly... they don't understand a direct correlation between people's pain and suffering and their own actions. And so a lot of people will do and say things, not trying to be sociopaths or bad people necessarily, but they inadvertently are sort of dampened to a greater sense of sensitivity towards others.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Rather to kind of dive into the language of it, not a sociopath, not an empath, but an apath. Apathetic.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good way of putting it. Exactly. They're apathetic.
Yeah.
They're not just pathetic. They're apathetic. Language is fascinating. But I used to be an English major, so I always dive into that and just go, wow, so fascinating. So the first thing, I'll just kind of go over these memes here. No particular order. Chuck D, Public Enemy, I follow him on the Instas, and he has this meme here saying, playing too humble will have you overlooked, underpaid, and underbooked. Talk your shit, own the room, and let the haters be uncomfortable. Okay, so I want to just say these and we can kind of get your gut reaction. What do you think he's saying there?
Just saying, just know your worth.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to, it shouldn't come across as being obnoxious and having an ego if you're just speaking the truth.
Yeah, exactly. Because kind-hearted people, sensitive people, people going through emotional abuse, people going through mental health problems, plain old shy people, people who are struggling to find their strength and empowerment, anybody really, it doesn't matter if you're an empath or not, but most regular, kind-hearted, sensitive, creative types of people, those people are generally the people in the world who are probably the most intellectually and emotionally honest and intellectually and emotionally mature, but also they're so sensitive to all the nuance of life. But what that also does is it makes them feel like a wallflower, or they get easily ran over by stronger people. And that's the thing about the whole might doesn't make right, is that there's a lot of really boisterous, loud people out there who really aren't intellectually in control of their language. They really don't have any right to be in charge. They're just louder and stronger and more obnoxious than the shyer person, but there they are. They're not really, they're put in that position because they take what they want and they just go for it.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we let them because we either apathy or indifference, you know? Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, that's what I think Chuck D is saying, is he's saying, you know, make people uncomfortable sometimes, you know, but then that kind of goes against what I've said and what I've spoke about on the show, is that what we're trying to do is create a kinder, gentler world. And that is true. And then I did some episodes about, you know, for example, using my dentist's office as people who are examples of when I had to sort of be tough and get a little snarky with people, get a little rude with people. And that is like, oh, well, see, now you're being a hypocrite. No. See, we have to illustrate there are times when it's, we should be gentle, we should be kind, we should be compassionate. And then there are times where you're dealing with people who aren't playing on our level. They're not playing fairly. They're not considering people's feelings. They're just transactional living. They might be sociopaths, or they just might be busy, busy people. Busy people, again, it's not a lacking in empathy, but it's like you said, apathetic. They're just not using empathy in their daily bread, even though they might be empaths themselves in a personal capacity at work. Sometimes they have to turn that part of themselves off in order to simply represent their own interest or the interest of their employer or something. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, so I use them as an example when I'm talking about other people, simply to illustrate that sometimes empaths especially have to get tough sometimes, and it doesn't make you a jerk, and it doesn't make you a sociopath.
No, not at all.
You know?
Just standing up for yourself does not make you any of those things.
Exactly. So I've got here another one says, empathy. The moment we see someone's unmet needs, instead of judging the coping mechanisms they have because of the unmet needs. So in other words, what that's saying is when you see somebody, let me reread that. Empathy. The moment we see someone's unmet needs, instead of judging the coping mechanisms they have because of the unmet needs. So I think what that's saying, that's the term for empathy. So empathy. The moment we see someone's unmet needs, instead of judging the coping mechanisms they have because of the unmet needs. So when somebody's upset or somebody's going through a struggle, could be a homeless person out there in the street, could be a sick person at a hospital, it could be your coworker who's having a bad day, it could be anybody. We have this tendency, it happens to me all the time on Facebook, and that's a perfect example, is I tend to, I don't want to say lash out, but I tend to say what's on my mind, and then the people, instead of reacting to my pain and suffering, they react to the discomfort they feel of my admission of my discomfort and suffering.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then they're putting me in a position where they're judging me rather than trying to help me. And that, I've said it a million times, I can't fucking stand people like that. Like, you're putting me, you're not only am I now suffering, but now you're ostracizing and alienating me because I'm suffering. Fuck and you, sir. You know, because that so happens. And you know, I think a lot of it, you know, because, oh man, it's like, it reminds me of that Canadian guy. I was working at the army base and he was so pissed that I was wearing shorts to work. And I was like, that's none of your fucking business. And I was doing it for medical reasons. Mm-hmm. Literal. I had hurt my back and I had, you know, we'll just say it. My balls were hurting. And so I was put on medical, observation through a doctor, and they told me not to wear pants for a couple of weeks. And so I said, I've got a note and go fuck yourself, you know. Mm-hmm. But he was such a jerk about it. He's like, well, we in Canada. I was like, really? We're going there? There's a reason why America kicks Canada's ass. And yes, you are known to be polite, but you, sir, are not being polite.
Yeah, right.
But I was like, it's none of your business. And he's like, yeah, but in a place of work, that's just unacceptable. Unacceptable. He's like, I'm like, oh, are you outraged now? Are you the outrage king? You know, it's like, oh, give me a fucking break. And I just simply told him, dude, I have a medical reason to be wearing shorts right now.
Yeah.
Besides
also,
that,
who the fuck cares?
Well, and then I told him, I said, and you're from fucking Canada. Nobody wears shorts in Canada anyways, unless they're insane.
Yeah.
And I said, and third, I said, you're in fucking California, bro. I said, so deal with it. If you're not used to people wearing shorts by now, geez Louise.
Yeah.
And I love Canadians, but he was a dick. He was such a dick.
Yeah.
He was the anti-John Candy because he was big and he looked like John Candy. But he was not nice like John Candy. He was the anti-John Candy. Okay, so I have one more here, and that is another meme. Says, when you naturally have a healing aura, you attract a lot of damaged people, and have them in your life could drain your energy to the max. A reminder that it's not your job to heal everyone that enters your life. Okay, so empaths are usually very... You know, if you're an empath that's struggling with being an empath, or say it's giving you mental health problems, or say you're just now realizing what you are, you may not be empowered yet. You're still at the phase of exploration and self-discovery. And so you're trying to figure out who you are and what you are. And so what happens is most empaths, including myself, and you, I noticed you too, people just gravitate towards us because we have a healing hand, you know, and that goes into something else. A good segue is that I'm crusty but kind. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about that for a second, because I think there's a lot of people think that when you're crusty, well, you couldn't be an empath then. I think a lot of people think of what an empath is and what it's supposed to represent, and they think it has to be some new age thing.
Yeah.
No, like that girl we just saw on YouTube, that new age. And we're going to talk about her at the end, by the way. Don't let me forget about that. I have it written here. But but people nowadays, when you define yourself as an empath, a lot of times there's a lot of baggage that comes with terminology. And so what happens is that we think that we're, oh, well, I'm an empath now, so I have to start acting as such. What does that mean? What does that entail? You know, that's like saying, well, I'm Canadian, so I have to be polite to everybody. Not necessarily.
Well, just like everything, there is no one way for everything. It's all individualized. Mm-hmm. Everybody's unique and different. So
Exactly. And so that's kind of what I've been trying to teach you guys through example of stories in my life, is we're trying to get you to understand that just because people gravitate towards you, or just because you're emotionally sensitive or empathically sensitive or energetically aware to the point where people kind of feed off of your positive energy, doesn't mean that you owe people something.
No, and with being crusty, it's kind of a protective mechanism sometimes.
That's exactly what it is, because I'm not always crusty. I don't wake up crusty every day. I tend to wake up crusty when I'm either upset at somebody or upset at something, or tired of our systems, or tired of our world, or tired of plastic fake nonsense. And I get crusty as a protective shield to protect myself from my ooey gooey nougat center, you know?
Yep. You gotta have something for stuff to bounce off of instead of absorbing all of it.
Exactly. So I'm basically, you know, I'm basically a Ferrero Rocher. or a Snickers or something. Hard outer surface, or a Payday bar, you know, with a soft inner center. Yeah, because at the end of the day, I want to be polite and kind to everybody. But when you're strapped for time, when you're strapped for energy, you have limited resources. And so at the end of the day, sometimes you have to get real with certain people who don't understand the boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you don't want to be rude to them, but sometimes some people just aren't self-aware enough or aware of you enough to understand where the boundaries are. And so as such, we want to help people as much as we can. But then, see, that's the thing also is that it feels to me like a lot of people nowadays are looking for reasons or means or excuses to never be compassionate. It's, in other words, I'm a bitch, I'm a justifiable bitch, and fuck you, and I always have a reason. It's like, okay, intellectually, yes, but that doesn't stop, that doesn't mean that you are in the right. You're still an asshole, you know, yeah. And just because you can intellectually justify it doesn't mean that you are, you know, because it doesn't mean you're necessarily a bad person, doesn't necessarily, but I think a lot of people nowadays are looking for ways to, instead of try to grow as people, they're looking for ways to excuse away their bad behavior.
It's easier justify. That way. Yeah, it's easier.
Right?
Less work and less introspection. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, anyway, I wanted to... Do you want to go ahead and read that article of 10 ways that we can be more kind?
I can do
that.
So
go ahead and read that. We've got this little article for you guys. And this is kind of just a nice... It just struck me as... Like, yeah, this is perfect.
Mm-hmm. And so it's 10 ways to show compassion.
Yeah.
And it was by Montessori Rocks. My sister used to work for Montessori School.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, it's set up so the 10 things start with the letters of compassion. So,
okay.
C-O-M.
Oh.
So first one is challenge yourself to smile more.
Yeah.
Because how many times do you walk into a room and see a majority of the people standing around looking like this with a little... grumpy face.
Yeah.
They may glance down at their phones or look up as you walk by, but most of the time people are just neutral. Challenge yourself to smile more.
Yeah. So before we go on to the next, I could we'll comment on each one.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you know, my friend Craig says it best. He's like, whenever I see a child, I go out of my way to be more polite and more kind, more smiley, more happy, because especially children... not only are they empathically sensitive like empaths, but do you really, you want to set the example. And if they think all adults are a bunch of big, serious meanies, it really does show you that the world can be this very cold and indifferent place.
Yeah.
And I think children who are, when we bring children into our world, we don't have to pander down to them necessarily. I mean, sometimes we have to talk at their level, but a lot of times we don't have to. We can explain mm-hmm. ourselves in a way that they understand, and that way they're learning and growing in real time, and they can then step into our world. Of course, we don't want to go too far there, but we don't have to pander down to children. But I do think we do have to take a knee, if you will, and sometimes see the world from their perspective.
Yeah, and they'll find out that things are shitty and can be shitty soon enough. Like, don't.
But that doesn't mean that there aren't good people or kind people in the world.
There are good people, yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And so that's what I try to do. When I say that I'm a soldier / Boy Scout, is that really encapsulates who I am and who I want to be. I want to be helpful. I want to be dependable. I want to be truthful. And I want people to see right away through my body language that I'm in control here, that I'm not... just here to make fun of people or mock people, that I can be emotionally mature. I have emotional intelligence and I'm receptive to you. But the problem sometimes is that needy people, and not all needy people are needy forever. Sometimes they might be lost, or maybe they're at a job they don't like, or maybe they're young. People sometimes need a little, they get needy. I was needy at one time when I didn't know what all this was, life. You know, you become clingy to certain people because you're attracted. I mean, like me, I went in the military and all the crew that went into the military from California went there together. Two of the four were in my boot camp, and there was this kind of like, well, we wanted to stick together. And then as soon as we were more confident and relaxed, we sort of went our own ways. Sense, But for a while there, we clung together as the California crew because it was all so new.
That was the one comfort that you had.
Even right.
You didn't know each other, you had that common denominator, and that was comforting in itself.
And then once it didn't matter anymore because you made friends with everybody else, you realized, oh, it didn't matter. I ended up not being friends with either of them two. In fact, they were kind of assholes. So I ended up becoming friends with a guy from Toledo, Ohio, and a guy from Alabama, and a guy from Florida, you know, all over the place. But the guys from California, one of them, the black guy. He wasn't in my boot camp, but he was in another boot camp near us, and I would see him from time to time. We got to be better friends than the two that were
saw every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so compassion, we find our tribe based off of not only our age and experience, but our also how we, you know, express ourselves. So being crusty for me is like showing people that I'm, yes, I'm jaded. Yes, I'm weary to the ways of the world, but I'm going to keep it real for you. And if I see something good about you, I'm going to go out of my way to let you know that I see you, because I think people need that, you know. But a lot of times, yes, at first people are like, oh, he's crusty. Oh, watch out for the crust ball, because he'll get you. But it's like your dad. Your dad's crusty, but he's kind.
Yep.
You know, crusty but kind.
Yep.
That's my jam. All right.
All right. Okay. Well, so yes, smile more. Mm-hmm. Second one, open the door for someone. So think about the last time someone held a door open for you. Was it at a store with your hands full? Was it your entering or exiting school? No matter where it took place, chances are you were grateful to the person who held the door for you, because it was one less task you had to worry about.
Yeah, so the gestures of kindness are always welcome, you guys.
Definitely.
And we live in a world now, and I've mentioned this on the show, when I moved up to Vancouver, Washington, God, I had neighbors. I'd walk right by them. Hey! And they would just stone face. You're like, well, fuck you too. Mm-hmm. I even said that a couple times. Like, fuck you too. They heard me. I don't care. Yeah. Like, you know what? You know, because I really think, I know we're living in a smartphone culture, and I've heard anecdotal evidence that kids nowadays don't have socializing skills, and kids nowadays this and that. But the people I'm talking about were older than me.
Yeah.
They should know fucking better, you know. Yeah. So when I see that people aren't willing to be kind to people, it tells me, and that's why we moved away from Vancouver, Washington. Portland is much kinder, and here where we're at is much kinder than even Portland, but especially of Vancouver, Washington, because the vibe you get there. There's a lot of people there who are jaded, cynical, and don't give a fuck. I worked with these two guys at Lowe's there, and they worked in the pro services. And man, they would go out of their way to make sure they weren't helpful to me, even though I was working the lumber department, and we had to coordinate together. I had to do orders for them. I had to pull product for them. We worked together. We worked with the same people, the same bosses and employers, and the same, you know, people would come in from construction jobs. We all had to be on the same page, and they would go out of their fucking way to make sure that I was unprepared. And so what did I learn? I learned that, you know, I'm sure there's some nice people there, because I met a few, and there were, but the prevailing attitude there was one of, fuck you, I'm tougher than you, I'm stronger than you, and you better not mess with me or else I'll stab you. That's the attitude that you get in some of these bigger city places. Yeah. But the thing is, I went to school in L.A., and I didn't get that.
Yeah.
So, no, you know, so it just depends, you know, because you would think, oh, L.A., the mean streets of L.A. When I'm ever in East L.A. or Inglewood or any of the tougher places, I had black folks that were so fucking nice to me. I got a story real quick. I have to say it. So I was I went with a friend to a rave. I've told you this story.
I remember this story.
And, and he's like, hey, you want to try some ecstasy? I'm in culinary school. I'm having a good time. I was 28. Okay, sure. And I got too high. I was like, oh, fuck. And so I said, hey, I'm going to go back to your car for a bit and just chill, because I can't people right now. He's like, oh, yeah, no problem. So I went back to the car, and I'm sitting there for a while going, oh, shit. And about 45 minutes later, I started getting used to the feeling, and I started smiling. I got out of the car, and you could tell I was high as shit, but I was these black guys were walking, and they're like, hey, you okay, man? You look like you're little. I was like, yeah, you know, I'm over at this rave, and this guy, you know, I kind of cheesed up the story. I said, this guy slipped me, you know, some ecstasy. I didn't know what it was. And like, oh, man, he's like, do you need help getting over there? And so they walked me over there, and they're like, okay, we'll have a good one, you know. So So my point is that kindness comes in the most unusual places. You think, oh, kindness comes from your own people, your own tribe, or your own skin color. Not always true. Some of them white people I fucking can't stand. They're just rude and mean and cruel. And some of the nicest people I've ever met were African American. And so all I would say is expand your horizons of who you think your people are, because it doesn't always boil down to skin color.
No, not at all. Not even a little bit. And just going back to your work thing, like my situation at work with that asshole that I work with, like he goes out of his way to make it more difficult.
Yeah.
And we're all in the shit show.
He must be
together.
From Vancouver, Washington. Just kidding. He's from California, Vancouver. Actually. You know I love you. I've met some good people there. But
yeah, just goes out of his way to make things shitty. And we're all in the shit storm together. Like,
yeah,
you're supposed to be in it together, helping each other get through it. Yeah, not antagonizing.
There is it's like our friends who moved back to California. They say that there's an 80-20 there, that 80% of people in Washington are cold and icy. They call it the Seattle freeze.
Yeah,
because there are people in Washington. I don't think Seattle, because Seattle's pretty liberal, but just outside of there, it's very, very rough and conservative. And nothing against conservatives, but roughnecks. We're talking, like Dexter, New Blood, where they live out in the middle of nowhere. They're hunters, they're fishermen, they're outdoorsmen, and they're tough as nails motherfuckers. And sometimes those people can be very kind, but sometimes they can be very, survival oriented. They're not all that. They're not social people, let's just say.
That's
you know what
nice
I mean?
Way to put it. Yes, exactly.
So
it all boils down to the little things like opening doors for people and just little kindnesses.
Exactly. I find that, I've always been that way. I don't open the door for you every time. I mean, I'm not going to walk around every time. But if I see that there's a situation where it's relevant, I'll always go out of my way to open a door, say please and say thank you.
I even say please
to Google, for crying out loud sometimes.
Well, it just reminded me of when we were walking to the show the other night, the Tool concert that we went
to.
And those girls that were students knew that this group of people that were all kind of ended up together were walking towards this arena.
Yeah.
And they turned around and said, oh, if you go this way, you'll hit this entrance and it's faster and easier.
Yeah.
Just a little thing like
Just
that.
Just a little thing like that. Going out of your way, you have information that they need. And instead of being a jerk about it, you can help these people have a better, comfortable life.
Like, and it was a little thing, but it kept us from going, walking further and being caught up.
Because we would have kept going that away.
And gone in the
We would have found it eventually, I think. But they really helped us understand the campus. And and it just little things like that. And that was the funny thing about the show is like, there was such a range of people at the Tool show, because some people there are metalheads, and not all metalheads are. Some are very kind, but some aren't. But to see how Tool brings out every type of person, I was amazed.
A lot of oldsters like us.
Oldsters, youngsters.
Like old school, grunge, whatever.
Unkind people, very kind people. In fact, in front of us was that guy, that white guy with the dreadlocks. He was a hippy-dippy,
exactly.
So, just that kind of music, because it's psychedelic and it's mind-expanding. It brings out the assholes, because they all think they're so, they're woke. They're the evolved ones.
Yes.
But then you get the hippy dippies and you get all the different types. But at the end of the day, for the most part, it had a good vibe. It got a little rowdy there because everybody was drinking, but as an empath, I wasn't sensing aggression. I was simply sensing boozy fun. That's what it said. That's what I was getting, because there was no fights, no altercations that I could see. So it was a great show.
It was amazing.
I mean, they look like ants from where we're at, but that's all right.
That's okay.
Well, and then it doesn't help that Maynard doesn't go front and center. He always goes way in the back.
Because
he doesn't want to be on stage, and he doesn't want a light on him at all. And which I think a lot of people who don't know Tool, if you know Tool, you already know what to expect. But if you don't know that going in, it's like, where's the lead singer? I don't see him. We're so used to like Aerosmith or somebody front and center. Yeah. There's the singer. For Maynard, he sings out in the shadows.
Yeah.
His shadow.
Exactly.
So
and that's what it was.
That's a perfect example that we were at a show. Everybody was drinking. Everybody was smoking pot. Everybody was having a good time. Nobody was hating. and everybody coming from all different walks of life, all the way from Portland, all over the state. And at the end of the day, it felt like a really kind and gentle place.
And the other little thing that, because everybody's having trouble finding seats, because the way they label that shit fucked up. Yeah. Like, oh, here, let's put the O for Oregon
above the actual seat number letter in the row.
So nobody can find it, but everybody's helping each other out. Like, oh, here, this is where I am, so if this is in relation to where you should be.
Well, dude, at one part, this one guy tripped and spilled his entire beer on me. I was drenched.
I missed that. I came.
And I was already, I already had two beers by then, so I was like, ah, fuck it, you know. But I didn't say, hey, motherfucker. I didn't say, and because it was wet, I wanted to go get someone to say, hey, put up a sign.
Yeah,
instead, I told everybody, hey, this is wet. Somebody spilled beer there. Oh, okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. And so just doing my part, you know, I'm responsible. It's kind of like if you're, you know, on an airplane and you're the one working where the emergency exits are, you have an added responsibility. And that's why they ask you, hey, are you okay with this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can't depend and rely on good Samaritanism, but it's still there and it's still alive even in the year 2022. And even though we talk a lot about how people are assholes nowadays, which there's no shortage of that, there's also no shortage of kindness, and thank goodness for that.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, so please and thank you, gestures,
open doors,
okay. Yeah, all that.
Number three, M, motivate others. So motivation is often an idea that many people struggle with. With the help from others, encouraging words and positivity can help to uplift someone's spirit.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely true.
Absolutely.
Just that little recognition that you're going through something and somebody just saying, hey, you got this.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Well, why wouldn't you? And you have to be, and that's what I mean about my stories of Vancouver, Washington. I don't think all of them were bad people, but you do get some people who subscribe to this idea of help yourself and help no one else, and they're completely jaded and they're completely cynical, and they think that's a way of life, and they really do think that that's the way to be. And it's like, no, I really do believe you get more out of life emotionally, and you become friendlier with people. You build relationships and you build things when you open up and be kind.
Yeah, absolutely.
So at the end of the day, that's what this show is all about, is motivating people. That's what I'm motivating you guys to say, you're good enough. You're smart enough. Gosh darn it. People like you. So, yep, yeah,
exactly.
I don't understand why some people wouldn't want to, but there are prevailing attitudes out there of I don't help anyone but myself.
Yeah.
I think that's a counterculture. I don't believe it's the
I don't think it's winning over the world.
No, I don't think it's,
but it's just those people are the loudest usually, so.
Yeah.
Well,
and that's what we got from the Trump supporting crowd. Not all of them. My friend Craig, he gets mad when people label Trump supporters or as this, this, or this, but then he'll boycott somebody who he says when somebody calls Trump supporter a moron, he takes exception to it. But he's like, but dude, we're not talking specifically about you. We're talking about an entire movement based off of fuck your feelings.
Yeah.
Fuck your feelings was their motto. And so how can you sit there and say that they're not a little bit rude, that they're not a little bit unkind, that they're not a little bit moronic sometimes.
Yeah, I still see people wearing those shirts at least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
And you can't, and you've seen a direct correlation between that movement and their shitty attitudes.
Yeah.
Am I wrong, dude?
No, you're not. You're not wrong, Walter.
You're just an asshole. Well, all right, then.
But yes, I'll stand there at the customer service desk and I'll literally just shake my head. I don't care if they see him.
Like, well, and but then, you know, Craig and that guy on the airplane, I've seen some kind-hearted...
And my friend at work.
Smart Trumpers that mind their own P's and Q's.
Yeah.
And so I don't like generalizing. But at the end of the day, if a movement was created on the backs of extracting liberal tears, how can I then feel sorry for you when your guy loses and now all he's trying to literally subvert democracy to win, and I'm supposed to care about your feelings now when all you did for 4 years is shit on my feelings? And so that's the point I'm trying to make you guys, is when I'm telling you guys to be strong, I'm not saying be a jerk to those people, but I'm saying understand who is worthy and deserving of your kindness, and who will take advantage and take for granted your kindness. There's nothing worse than that non-reciprocity of kindness. When you show a gesture of kindness, you expect that gesture to be reciprocated, and when it isn't, it shows a lack of integrity. It shows a lack of kindness, but more than that, it shows me that you haven't fucking grown as a person. Yeah. That's what it shows me. And to be leery of people who haven't grown. They don't have the emotional honesty and emotional intelligence to understand why we are try to be polite and kind. Because at the end of the day, what I think it boils down to, you guys, is that the world is hard. We take all our modern conveniences for granted, but life, no matter how soft and weak and easy you make it for folks, life is still hard. The forces of gravity are still working toward us. We're still aging. We are still slowly aging and falling apart. And you cannot tell me that people don't need help in this world. We cannot make it in this world by ourselves. We got to find our tribe. We have got to live a greater sense of kindness and goodness, because if we don't, then how do you separate the fuck your feelings crowd from actual criminals? If you don't want to be treated as a criminal, then don't act like one.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There we go.
All right.
On to the list. Yeah. Number four, which kind of goes into everything we've been talking about, but practice acts of kindness.
Yeah.
So many of the ideas on this list fall into the category act of kindness.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, I am reaching out as an empath to other empaths, but that doesn't mean that I disinclude people who aren't considered empaths. You know, our friend Idris, she listens to the show regularly. And the other day she's like, you know, I'm very intuitive, but I never called myself an empath. And I'm not sure if I'm an empath, because then I was listening to your episode where you said that other guy isn't an empath. And now I feel like if I say I'm an empath, you're going to say, no, you're not. And I'm like, no, it's not about that. It's just that with this particular individual, I get the sense that he is not an empath because he's super insensitive. He's super unaware. He does not strike me as somebody who would have the kinder, gentler, more sensitive sensibilities to be an empath. But he calls himself that, and so I don't really believe it really applies to him. But again, like I said, it's not my place to judge. If he wants to be an empath, let him be an empath. Maybe he is, and maybe I haven't seen enough of him. But he just strikes me as someone who's not at that level of being highly intuitive. That's all. Mm-hmm. And so I told her, I said, well, the criteria is pretty easy to tell if you're an empath or not. Intuitiveness. And then what were the other two? I had it. Now I forgot it. It was intuitiveness and an ability to feel other people's feelings or feel their agendas or sense their motivations. And then an ability that you are often very just a highly sensitive person. So intuition, literally physically or emotionally sensing other people's feelings or their motives or motivations or their symptoms, physical or emotional symptoms. That has to be one of them. And then, of course, being just a highly sensitive person. Usually you can tell that through, you know, when they don't walk around like a big jerk all the time. You know, like, I would never think my friend Craig is an empath. Reason being is that no empath would ever walk around that herky-jerky. He just wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And while I know it's tongue-in-cheek for him, I sincerely believe, even me, I'm a crusty person, but being a crusty person would never make me be unkind to someone for no good reason. There's a difference between being crusty but kind and simply being a crusty asshole. Because there are crusty people out there who are jerks, but there's also crusty people who are only doing it to put up a protective barrier between themselves and the real world because they get taken advantage of or because they get hurt a lot. When you put yourself out there, it's like putting this giant t-shirt on that says, take advantage of me. So sometimes we have to put up our guard. That's all.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
Absolutely.
So what was that one again?
Practice acts of kindness.
Yeah, so practicing acts of kindness is pretty self-explanatory, but I always go out of my way to do that. I mean, you know, that doesn't mean that I can't be jerky sometimes. A lot of people, like when I'm anxious, I get very curt with people because I run out of patience, and then I have to tell them, like, that's my anxiety talking. That's not judgment upon you, so I apologize. So just try to understand when people are feeling needy or when people are feeling sore or when people are upset. Don't judge that emotion. Judge their intentions, their intention behind that emotion. If you sense that they're struggling, why would you want to pile on just because they didn't come correct? Perhaps they, you know, it depends on how much they didn't come correct. If they only came a little bit incorrect, you could say, well, come on. But if they really, really, really came incorrect, like, then, okay, that's different. You have the right then to correct their behavior. But in most cases, we shouldn't judge others on what they're going through because we're not in their shoes. And I'll talk about that again later, but yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so number five, and the way these are worded is a little bit weird because it's going along the letters of compassion. Yeah. So. But number five is allocate time to bond with friends and family, which is pretty self-explanatory.
Allocate time
to bond with friends and family.
To bond with friends and family. So I'm trying to build an empath tribe. you know, perfect example is I have some friends who I just bond with very naturally. And then I have even closer friends who I can't seem to bond with, like my chiropractor buddy, because we live such different lives. We have such different values.
And he doesn't allocate the time.
And he doesn't. He's not generous with his time. Exactly. Yeah. And so how can you sit there and say, oh, I'm a chiropractor, I'm a healer, when you don't understand the healing touch? And that's why I say watch people's intentions. Because a lot of times people will come off as things, and I have a whole big spiel about that at the end, but watch for people's intentions, because even though they come off as healers, doctors, chiropractors, nurses, some of them have a really good intuitive touch, whereas some don't. I've known tattoo artists with a great bedside manner who would make wonderful doctors, and I've met doctors who are straight up assholes who don't have good bedside manner, and and we're not just talking about geniuses like Dr. House. I mean, people who don't even deserve to, you know, it's like maybe they went to school, maybe they got the degree, but they never went to charm school, and it shows.
Yeah.
You know, they're, it's like you look at Dr. Rand Paul. You're a fucking doctor? How on earth are doctors like you the most insincere, lying, no good, mean-spirited people? How can you go into the medical field and be that way? And you see it over and over again. And so I would say, you guys, if you have a doctor that you're not, you know, coalescing with, find a new doctor. I mean, you know, I liked our old doctor, but she was a little uptight sometimes. But this new doctor, I really like her.
Yeah.
You know, and I've told you guys about how some professionals, you know, they have this sense of superiority, and I've got a whole episode on all that, but that doesn't mean that we're unkind to them. Just that watch where people in our society, the natural hierarchy of people. I've had people who think they're at a higher level than me, whether it be you know, law and order, whether it be, you know, a teacher, whether it be a doctor or a lawyer, professional, but they all have an inherent sense that we're supposed to kiss their ass, and then they don't like it when you talk to them like a regular person. It's like, get off your fucking pedestal, guy.
Yeah.
If I was a doctor or a chiropractor, I'd be Dr. Bry. Dr. Bry. I don't need all the formalities. I'd probably wear shorts.
Yes, I'm sure you would.
Because you know me. I really cannot stand pretentiousness. When we pretend to be up higher than we are, but we're not. I like things to be up higher, but I want it to be real, not coming from a place of, oh, I went to school one time. I don't give a fuck. We all went to school.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yes, go ahead.
All right. Number six is say encouraging words.
Easy enough.
Easy enough.
I got nothing.
Yeah. No, I know.
Yeah. I mean, You got something to say on that?
I don't have any particular stories or anything, but
yeah,
it's just it. You can like you said, when you see people are down, just give them a little word of encouragement. Just,
yeah, well, and that's what I mean is that there's a lot of people who wouldn't consider themselves empaths, but are aware enough to see when somebody else is down, or you know, it's like when your cat sees you're down. Mm-hmm. If a cat can do it, then a person can really do it. And if you can't tell. That was like my friend, you know, he's married. She'd come in fuming, and he was completely oblivious. And I truly believe he was a sociopath. He was a psychopath, my friend Charles. I've told stories about him in the past, but you can tell the difference between someone who's just, you know, momentarily lacking awareness and somebody who just cannot sense other people.
Yeah.
You know, so if you see people are down, encourage them. Encouragement.
Exactly.
Couples retreat. Yeah.
If, for sure. And number seven, not so appropriate in this day and age, but share a hug or a handshake.
Yeah, okay, COVID, you know, but you can't hug and handshake like you used to. But, you know, you could still fist bump or you could elbow bump.
Exactly, yeah.
Or you could show encouragement through, I know the fake high five is now back in style.
Oh, is that?
Where you just high five the air together. You know, that's a thing. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, I've told you guys, you know, my family background, we were loving, but we weren't expressive. We didn't hug a lot. I mean, you know, we kissed goodbye sometimes and stuff, but we weren't super huggers. But now that I'm getting more evolved emotionally, I feel the need to become a little bit more that way because I know one day that hug that I hug my mom is going to be the last time I ever see her one day. And I hope that's a long time from now, but life is short, you guys. So show your kindness, express your gratitude, and express yourselves and who you love as much as you can, as often as you can, because honestly, you guys, I mean, what else is there in this life but community? I mean, yes, not everybody's worthy, and not everybody will meet our criteria, but I like to think of bad people as the bug, not the feature. I hope. I really sincerely believe.
More people
want to be kind. But in order for people to be kind, I really think you have to show people that kindness exists. And when they see that it exists, they're encouraged to be kind. And it kind of has that pay it forward effect. And so that's what this show is all about, is that I'm not 100% kind all the time. I don't come off like Mr. Rogers. I'm a much more complex and sophisticated version of Mr. Rogers, in that if Mr. Rogers existed in the year 2020, I think he would be more like me, in that back in those days, you were pandering to children. It was children's learning. And so you were very, you know, slow and meticulous about how you came across. As Mr. Rogers, if he were to grow up in this world, I think there would be a level of sophistication there and a level of nuance there. And so I think at the end of the day, we all want people to be kind, but at the same time, you know, there's layers there. There's layers, and you have to let those layers exist because I think a lot of people are like, well, you're this and you're this, and you don't seem that way. It's like, well, what am I supposed to walk around acting like, you know, Gandhi because I'm an empath, you know? And I got more to say on that because I want to talk about that at the end. I have more to say, but we'll save it for the end. Go ahead.
Okay. We're getting there.
Yeah.
Number eight, incorporate the phrase thank you into your daily routine. And I like the way this words it. It says, we often have a tendency to believe that our gratefulness for any given act is implied. But the reality of the situation is that our thankfulness for most things in life is left unspoken. Gratitude is something that should never be left unspoken.
Yeah. So I have a saying, I've been using it for years. I believe I coined it, unless someone did accidentally before me and simply didn't, you know, copyright it. But I, you know, I say more, less attitude, more gratitude. And that reminds me to be more gratitude of the air you breathe, of the life you have, of the friends you have, of the ease of life and the comforts and health that you have. And that doesn't mean that we don't get impatient for more. And this doesn't mean that we don't get sick and tired of the world, you know, cock blocking us and, you know, where opportunities just don't exist like they used to. We have to be somewhat vigilant in our advocacy towards socio-political change, because if we don't push the envelope, the status quo will never get pushed to a higher place. That's what being a political person is. That's what being driven by political change is all about. Is you don't want to be militant. You just simply want to keep pulling the line towards kinder, better ways, towards better policies, towards more equality. So at the end of the day, that woke mob, if you will, can come off very militant and angry and flippant, when really I think their mission is of kindness, of greater kindness. But that's where I think the woke people get a little confused, is that you're supposed to be more evolved than you should know better. Like, I understand why you're upset, but now you're supposed to reach the next level of self-discovery, where you understand that not everybody can be at your level, and you're okay with that. And you become self-actualized enough to not be bitter and angry towards others simply because they're not, you know, because like me, for example, like I have nothing against anyone of any, I'm a very pro LGBTQ person, but this whole pronoun thing, of course I'm a he, him, look at me. I have a giant beard. So I don't mind that it's done. I find it redundant. It's not that I have a personal problem with it.
Well, for you, it's redundant.
It just doesn't.
For a lot of people, it's not.
Do I have to advertise my sex? I just think it's self-evident.
Well, maybe. But there are people that look like you.
If that's a way to point out solidarity towards the LGBTQ community, then I'm all in.
Well, like, yeah, that is.
But I don't. I don't
and
do
that's
it because
the thing,
I
when people you know. When you feel like it's obvious, the fact that you've respected enough to do it lets them feel more comfortable doing it, so then they don't feel like they're standing out as much.
Well, sure.
So
sure. And in that regard, for solidarity purposes, I say go for it. I personally, I don't know. You can't mistake me for anything but a male. That's just, look at me. I'd be the ugliest woman on planet Earth. Especially with my beard.
There are degrees of everything.
So, no, I know. I mean, but you know what I'm saying. I do support them and equality and multiculturalism and equality in every form.
Well,
and
I
think that it's just become so, like, I guess it's just so societal driven that I'm not a societal person, that I find that just a overkill, I guess. But I have nothing against it. Yeah. It's just, for me, it's like, it's a personal choice. It's like, I don't have to say that. You know I'm a dude.
Yeah.
It's nothing personal towards them or the movement. Because if that shows solidarity, well, I'll go change it right now.
Yeah, that is what it is.
Yeah. But no, I agree. You know, what was the word? What was that one?
It was talking about thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Incorporate the phrase thank you into your daily
life. Oh, yeah. Please and thank you. I grew up that way. You know, that's what I mean, is like I grew up in a small town in the 80s where you said hi to police officers. You said hi to everybody walking by. You knew your mailman and your UPS guy intimately. You knew his wife's name and kid's name sometimes. It was just a very personal thing, and we've become so used to there being more and more and more and more people that exponential growth has overpopulated our planet. And in doing so, it has made us sort of shirk off our responsibility toward each other of kindness.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just find I try not to lose that small town wholesomeness, because it reminds me of a better, simpler time. And I think oftentimes it allows people, when they see what you're like, oh, he's like old school. I see you. You're wholesome. You're kind of old school small town. I see what you are. And it allows other people to be themselves. The word? It takes down their guard. I can't think of the word that I want, but it just allows them to realize, oh, okay, there's good, kind people, you know, like at the tool show. I was buzzed, having a good time. I was walking up to people, talking. I was inserting myself into conversations. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes people were like, who the fuck is this guy? But we were just all having a good time. And I felt a sense of kumbaya because everybody was there to enjoy themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're all coming together no matter where we were coming from. It didn't matter.
Yep.
We were just having fun.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Is that all of it?
No, we still got two more.
Go ahead.
So number 9, offer to help someone with their to-do list.
So we're on O?
Yep, we're on O. To-do lists seem to be endless. However, as the saying goes, many hands make light work.
So say that again, please.
Offer to help someone with their to-do list.
Oh, okay. Well, that's different. I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I'm doing here, you guys, is I am food for thought. I want people, I don't expect people, some things you're going to know if I say something. Oh, I already know that. My mom does that a lot. I already know that. Like she's very, I think, insecure about people, you know, judging her intellect wrong. She's like, cause she's smarter than she lets on. And so I think she'll say a lot of times to me like, well, I know that. Okay, well then disregard, you know, but that's what I'm doing here is I'm offering a ton of things so that we can explore these topics so that it's food for thought and it helps shape your life. It helps shape your values. It helps shape your mental health. And as an empath, it'll help you shape how you can become a more insightful and calm and rational one with the universe, omnipresent force in this universe, you know. And I have a whole episode that we're going to be doing next. The next episode is all about portals, and we're going to talk about portals and EVPs. We're getting back into the paranormal a little bit, but I have a whole thing where we're going to talk about just all the metaphysics of life, you know, because that kind of goes into that tool and what tool's all about. It's always about metaphysical, the physical, where the physical meets the spiritual. And that's kind of what we're doing here is we're trying to get folks to see that, yes, we're crude physical beings, but much like Yoda said, but we're also luminous creatures, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Although that doesn't have anything to do with what that list was.
Forgive me then.
Exactly. And then last one is nurture relationships by taking time to listen to others.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, you guys, I say this all the time, is that you get out of friendships what you put in, and you have to be kind and generous with your time. And, you know, I find people nowadays are just not generous with their time. They say they're busy. I think they're emotionally unavailable because either they aren't generous or kind with their time, or they want people to, it's like my friend, the chiropractor, and I don't mean to pick on him. I'm just using him as an example, is that not only does he have bad instincts when it comes to bedside manner with other people, but he demands that others treat him with a sense of reverence and superiority because of how hard he worked in chiropractor school. And a lot of doctors do that too. And police officers, frankly, do. Anybody in a position of authority does that. And while I have no problem being reverential towards people with authority or people who deserve it, don't demand it. I'll just do the opposite. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you cannot expect people to come correct when you're not coming correct yourself. That's what it boils down to. So if you're a doctor, if you're a chiropractor, and you have good bedside manner, as long as you're treating your patients with the same reverence you expect them to treat you, then yes, it's absolutely, reciprocity is absolutely assured. But if it's one of those situations where you demand people treat you like you're up here, but nobody sees you that way, that's what I mean, you guys. Only you see yourself as important. Only you see yourself as is worthy and valid. And we live in a world where we all want to be validated. We all want to be worthy. But at the end of the day, we can really make asses out of ourselves when we think too highly of ourselves. You know, because we're all people. And people cough, and they trip, and they make mistakes, and they're unaware. And so the never-ending, we are literally, quite literally, the human species, quite literally, is just a comedy of errors, a comedy of flaws and faults, and that's okay. But at the end of the day, don't expect me to kiss your ass because you think you're perfect. Because at the end of the day, I'll prove that you aren't. You know, but that doesn't mean that I don't want more, better kindness. And that's what I mean about the spirit of compassion. Is the spirit of compassion means I'm going to come correct with you. And if you reciprocate that, then man, we're going to be, there's going to be a simpatico there. And that, that builds bonds, that builds relationships, and that builds a greater sense of good cheer and a wholesomeness in our culture that just frankly is being taken away by everything getting bigger and bolder and more sophisticated. I think we just, I think we're taking ourselves too seriously. We really do think we're these creatures that we've socially evolved to the point where we think that we no longer have to be kind to one another.
Yeah.
Or I'm never going to see that person again. So why bother? When I was in the EMT school, I picked up a piece of trash and threw it away. I always do that. And my teacher says, "Hey, I'd like Brian to come up to the front of the class." I'm like, "Oh shit, what'd I do?" And he's like, "Hey, I saw you from across the street pick up a piece of trash. Nobody else, you all walked by it. Brian picked it up." And that's what kindness is. Kindness and integrity is doing the right thing even when you think no one else is looking.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't even believe in God, so I don't believe that God was watching. I do it because that's how I was raised. I do it because when we contribute together to the betterment of society, I don't see that as conformity. I think conformity is conforming to bad attitudes, conforming to attitudes of indifference, callousness. That's more conformity to me than conforming to kindness and generosity. So I believe, you know, I'm not saying I'm a perfect person, far from it, but I do believe that how you're raised and how you talk and how you carry yourself very much informs other people at what your values are. And at the end of the day, that is going to make or break, I think, your friendships and your bonds with other people. Mm-hmm. So.
Yes.
Anyway. So repeat that one last time, please.
It was nurture relationships by taking time to listen to others.
Yeah. So, you know, that's, I mean, just be generous with your time and listen to people. If someone's suffering, I mean, you know, there are going to be needy people out there who don't know where the boundaries are. There's going to be people there who perhaps become psychic vampires and they don't know where the boundaries are and they might latch on to you because of their own insecurities or because maybe they're new at a job and the new person latches on to you and you don't want them latching on to you because you're having a hard time at work and you don't want to set the bad example. And so you kind of have to, you know, it's kind of like you talking about when you were a medical assistant, is that you would get new people that would latch on to you, but you were so jaded by that point that you were trying to balance your kindness and goodness with this sense of cynicism because you had been screwed over so much for so long because these doctors are quite naturally sociopathic when it comes to their generosity towards their own people, their own, literally the backbone that keeps them alive.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's why I get anti-corporate sometimes. It's not because I think you can't find goodness in those jobs. I think you could. I don't hate every person. I don't hate anybody who works in those jobs. I worked most of my life in those jobs. So it's not about hating the people. It's about hating systems that continue to corrupt people in that indifference towards others and in man-made hierarchies that I don't value. If you say you're a manager, but I don't, you know, if I see that you're more wise and more experienced than me, then I will give you that reverence. I will surrender by humbling myself. It's like in the army. I did that all the time. Like a colonel in the army demands that I lower my voice, that I treat him with respect, and that I acknowledge their experience because it may come down to me depending on them in a life and death situation. But in the civilian world where everybody is fighting for equality, everybody's fighting for validation, and oftentimes we see a lot of people in authority exploit or abuse that authority, oftentimes the kindness just isn't there. And so, you know, you really have to be put together and in a good place for to be able to set the example. Because if you're not in a place where you're well put together, you're not going to be in a position to carry yourselves like someone who is more self-actualized. You can't fake mm-hmm. it. You either are or you aren't.
Yeah.
You know, and that doesn't mean I don't have bad days, or we all don't have bad days. It's just that more times than not, that's what life is the accumulation of greater knowledge and best practices, so we can arrive at a place of betterment, so that we have kinder sensibility, so we have more better science, better practices, and at the end of the day, greater self-actualization, so that we reach that highest level of transcendence into omnipresence, or transcendence into self-actualization. But at the end of the day, you know, we don't often, when you go to a job, you're not trying to enrich yourself into Gandhi. You're simply trying to survive it. It's like a battle.
Yes, exactly.
And in battle, you're not always going to be so pleasant. You don't always have the time to be. So try to understand the circumstances. When you're at work and it's busy, don't expect people to please and thank you every single time. If you know it's implied, you know, like I said, in battle, in the heat of a rush at the grocery store, sometimes people are going to be a little curt with you or short with you for expediency's sake. Try to realize that not everyone can come correct in a situation where you're doing battle, you're in the foxhole, and you're just trying to survive. So in real life, we can't always carry ourselves like Gandhi. I've tried.
There's people that take advantage of that too.
When I started at the Army base, when we were working there, I was trying to, at that point in my life, I was trying to start being kinder, gentler, and I was trying to practice Christianity then. And I was trying to go into a situation where I treated everybody with respect and dignity, and as such, I would earn everybody's respect. But it fucking backfired. There was a bunch of assholes out there. And at the end of the day, I realized that I wasn't going to... That Gandhi shtick isn't going to work here. That I was going to have to be tough with people. And I did. I had to learn it. I didn't want to, but that's the problem, is that sometimes we're kind, but sometimes people just aren't having it. And so we have to almost learn how to be strong in situations where being our real self isn't always so effective.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
But go ahead, baby. Was that it?
That was it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on all that? So we paused there because my wife thought that was too big of a question. And she's right. She's right. That's a big question. she's like, cut! Sorry, I didn't mean to call you out, but I want you guys to know what's going on. That is a big question. I know. I'm sorry, babe. That was not fair. I wanted you to say something while I was drinking coffee. That's all. but at the end of the day, I do believe practicing kindness takes effort. And it does take having, a sense of self-awareness. You don't have to be a perfect person to be kind. But going out of your way, be generous with your time. Go out of your way to give people a boost. Go out of your way to help people. But if you run across sociopaths, or if you run across psychic vampires, that's when you cut them off. You go, oh, okay, oops-a-daisy.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
And so
you have to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And that allows you to take care of other people.
Exactly. But I think the reason why I, am crusty, if you will, is because I'm almost 50 years old. I've been through the military. I've been through college. I've been through culinary school. I've been through EMT school. I've been partially through the firefighter academy. I've been through truck driving school. I've driven big rigs. I've driven limousines, on and on. And that's not bragging. Everybody thinks when you list your credentials, but you're bragging. No, I'm just, I'm mentioning that you've had to fit a lot of different molds. You've been pushed into a lot of different molds, and that makes you energetically have to become a lot of different things. You put a lot of irons in the fire, and that makes you more worldly and experienced. You know human behavior. You understand implicitly what people are like, for the good and for bad. And so at the end of the day, all these accumulated experiences, will get you some crustiness. It just will. It just because you get, you know, I wasn't born yesterday. And as such, you know, sometimes people take that crustiness as rudeness, or they take it as, you know, like you're putting up wall barriers. But really, sometimes you have to, because in that real world out there, we can't walk around in robes and kumbaya or Gandhi, because a lot of times then people will see your vulnerable side and attack you for it. So that's where you have to be careful, is you can be kind, but if you show your vulnerability to people like sociopaths, sociopaths live and breathe to exploit those vulnerabilities. And if you make it easy for them to identify, then at the end of the day, it's going to be harder for you to be empowered, because at the end of the day, they're seeing through your shtick and they're going to call you out on those things. And so be very careful how you energetically align yourself with certain terms, how you, you know, carry yourself, what you call yourself. You know, like if I was working a job like you and everybody knew that I was an empath, I mean, people make fun of me behind my back for calling myself that, but I just don't care anymore at the end of the day. But if I was working a real job, oh, I could see how people would just have a fucking field day thinking it was all pseudoscience. They don't want to learn. They don't want to grow. It's funner to make fun of people.
Yeah, for a lot of people. But again, like you, I don't fucking care.
Right.
If I say something and somebody has a notion about that.
Then... And you work with some pretty decent folks.
I do, yeah.
You got lucky there.
Yeah.
Because if I was with the crew when I was working at Lowe's up in Washington, god damn, they were just fucking, they weren't all mean, but it was just, some of them were just cutthroat. Mm-hmm. They would go out of their way to not give you info because they don't care. Because they don't want to be there, because they think, because a lot of them were like carpenters and people who would rather be working as carpenters. And anybody who would rather be somewhere else doing something better often takes that, has that attitude. I mean, shit, I've done it. I mean, I'm too good for a lot of jobs.
But everybody at my job.
But at the end of the day, you humble yourself and say, yes, I mean, I'm probably too good for this job. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to let that shape my attitude towards my interpersonal communications between people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So sure. Let me go over my list here. I've got a few things here. So the reason why we're kind is because grief is real. We're all grieving. And it, just because people smile, just because people can fake it a day or a week or a month, does not mean that who they really are and their real struggles aren't tormenting them. And so why would we want to come incorrect on people who are grieving? That's the problem, is that everybody's grieving over something or someone.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I told you when it came to our friend that works with you now, Wendy, is that I wanted her husband just passed away 3 months ago, and then she has to start a new job. So please just be extra tender to her. And you will, of course, but I was just telling you, like, oh God, just, it hurts me to see that she has to start a new job, despite the fact that she's literally living with the worst kind of grief you could ever have.
So try
to understand that at a visceral level. And so, let me just go over this real quickly here. Hang tight. Okay, so I have written here, recognize when you're going off the rails. Now, you could interpret that a couple different ways. Going off the rails doesn't mean that you're going down a downward spiral into oblivion necessarily, although it could mean that. But for me, in my 20s, going off the rails meant that you were losing grips with reality, that you were drinking too much, that you were losing your traction at your job, you were losing your responsibility levels, you were losing yourself in your party lifestyle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it could mean all those. But for me, now that I'm pushing 50, recognizing when you're going off the rails simply means if you think you're going off the rails, you probably are. If you have to ask yourself that, then you probably are. That could be with your drinking. That could be with your drugging. That could be with your libations. That could be simply with your responsibility levels at your job. Say you're shirking your responsibilities. But life is the great balancing act. And so if you recognize that you're going off the rails, that's a really mighty good time to start assessing how to get back to center. Because you don't want to wait till it's too late. You don't want to end up where my uncle is, where he recognized too late that he was going off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And I won't go into that, but the point is that he lost his fucking mind. And my dad, drinking, and then died. You know, I know life is hard. I know life is taxing. I know life can bum us out, and we have certain recreational substances that we like to use, but you better know when you're using it and when it's using you. You know, going off the rails can mean a lot of things, but in that particular instance, for me, going off the rails is when you cease. It's like for me, going off the rails for me is when I start shirking my responsibilities, or when I notice that I'm not being as kind as I usually am. That means that I'm frustrated. It means that I'm anxious. It means that somebody or some system is upsetting me to the point of being unkind. And it's easy to stay in that place when you feel that the world is just giving you nothing but manure. And so when you recognize that your behavior is changing, you're becoming a bad person, you're becoming a shittier version of yourself, don't let that take over. That's how people become Darth Vader. That's how people grow from small-time crooks to big-time crooks. That's how, when you ignore the little telltale signs that are trying to tell you something, hey, you're losing it here, listen to that. Your conscience is your guide. And if you don't listen to your conscience, then what's the point of having one, you know? So that's what I'll say about that.
I can definitely relate to that, though, with the job making you act in a way that's not you.
Yeah, because you get so uptight, people are so rude all the time that it can make you lose yourself. And while you have to maintain sort of an outer shell, if you will, of strength and I don't know, I want to say you almost have to be intimidating, but not to that point. That's probably too strong.
Yeah,
just strong enough to where you don't be put yourself in a situation where people can hurt you or take advantage of you.
Mm-hmm.
Empower yourself,
yeah,
but don't let that negativity take over and change your personality into someone 10 times worse than who you really are.
Yeah.
And oftentimes when we get around people that aren't kind, it gets really, especially in a new job, or especially say you start brand new in the army or start brand new at college or brand new at a new school or brand new at a new job, is that if you get around people who aren't kind, you have this desire to fit in, and then you might become unkind because you want to fit in with those people. It's kind of like Dexter New Blood. Harrison wants to be kind and be accepted by his peer group, and then he ended up ODing, you know, because he knew it was wrong, but he had reached fuck it, and he went for it, and he learned his lesson. Mm-hmm. And then as he grew, but see, that's where we're learning that he has a dark passenger, that he has a dark side, that Dexter's going to have to teach him how to control his urges to hurt others, because it, you know, you could be hurting the wrong people. Whereas, you know, Dexter's whole code is, if you're going to kill people who are killing people, kill people who are hurting people.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's necessarily right, but it's certainly better than hurting innocent, good people. Okay. So we got a few more here and we'll be done. So I have written here, moral leaders and moral leadership. We talked about that the other day, hon, remember?
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about how I feel like the reason why we're losing grips on goodness and wholesomeness in our society is because we're losing our heroes. We're losing our moral leaders. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're the most moral people necessarily, but moral leadership means that somebody symbolizes hope, somebody symbolizes goodness and good cheer, and it helps us to become better people through their example. Think Gandhi. Think Captain America. Think, you know, Luke Skywalker, whoever, you know. But the point is that we tell those stories so that people find their inner strength and their inner kindness as well. And so at the end of the day, I sincerely believe, you know, it saddens me to see Betty White, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger isn't gone yet, but I know I'm probably going to outlive these older folks because they've got, you know, they got 40 years on me. So we're going to end up losing all the people that we grew up with that helped helped us form our own values. And what does that do to a culture that's getting so big? It's not that I think kids nowadays are bad. I don't. I defend kids and the younger generations all the time that life has become harder. Life has become less rewarding. Life has become situationally more difficult, and therefore it is easy to become sort of glamored into becoming a shittier person or a harsher person. And in doing so, we lose ourselves for a time. And so I worry that we're losing our moral leaders. What do you think? Do you think that's true? And what do you think?
I think it definitely is leaning that way. Not completely. I mean, there are still good ones, but there's a lot of people in charge that don't have a moral compass. And are a lot of them.
When you see time and time again some of our institutions being challenged, and they're being challenged because those authority figures have lost touch with where their moral compass is.
Yeah, and they're not there for the right reasons. And
when you see Border Patrol with Trump hats on, like, wow, you're a Border Patrol agent, but you hate Mexicans. Maybe you shouldn't be in that job. Because you're not going to have compassion towards people who cross that border. You're there to kick ass and take names, and I just don't find that to be right. I had another example and I lost it. Gosh darn it. but we see that all the time, you know.
And it's frustrating.
It's hard enough being a good person in a world that's not always good. It's even harder when we don't have examples. And so that's why I love teachers, because teachers are not just teachers. They're not just educators. They're cult objects, cult of personality objects. They're mentors, you know? And so at the end of the day, we have to have moral leaders. Can you think of moral leaders that you grew up with that helped shape your values? Can you think of any off the, I know that's hard to think of at the top of your head.
Well, like you said, teachers. I have teachers that to this day I'm Facebook friends with that really helped shape who I was and
me too.
How I saw things.
You know, like I had a lot of teachers that took to me because I was this really sensitive, quiet, shy kid, but I was very creative and I wrote stories, and I wrote this story called Thriller. And of course, I stole it from Michael Jackson Thriller, but never mind that. The story wasn't about that though. And Mr. Boyle was my fourth grade teacher, and he was somebody that encouraged me, much like we just said. He encouraged me, he helped me, and he helped me to become stronger. When I was in soccer, my coach, Coach Wally Mark, was my mentor. He taught me to be stronger than I was, and so by the third year I became soccer goalie, I could take kicks to the face. I was this really sensitive, shy kid, and by the third year, I had grown into a very empowered and tough little booger man,
And that's mostly who is that I can think of was teachers.
Yeah. Did you have dance instructors that did that for you?
No.
No?
Not really.
Really?
No. There was one, but the main, the head of the dance place that I went to.
Really?
Yeah.
She has a degree in dance, you guys, and so she's done a lot of
college.
It.
Yeah,
through the college.
But my growing up, the dance company there, or the studio that I went to, like we've talked about before, I wasn't one of the rich kids, so I didn't get that from her at all. I didn't get that nurturing. I didn't get any of that from her.
Why do you suppose that is? Was there a sense of elitism there?
Oh,
maybe,
yeah.
Or is that what it was?
Yep, that's totally what it was. Huh. So I actually. As much as I love dancing, I felt like an outcast that whole time that I was with that studio.
Yeah, well,
but then when it got to be college, then it was totally different. It was completely different.
I learned that's why we kind of didn't stay on the Central Coast, is that poor people raised by a single mother like I was an only child raised by a single mom, had to live with my grandparents. For a time, I lived in apartments. For a time, I lived in mobile homes. For a time, I lived in garages of my grandparents' house that had been converted into bedrooms, and I got mocked to no end about it. And then I started seeing through over time how that was starting to affect my soccer career. One year I wasn't selected to be on the team that I had been on for like 8 or 9 years, and it hurt my feelings, man. And so, yeah. So anytime you see that socioeconomic injustice, I mean, yeah, that is not kind. And but I don't think all people are like that.
No, not at all. But especially
but it,
when you're
but it
a
happens
kid,
in a lot of places that are upper middle class.
Yeah, when it's directed at you as a child, it's even
when you
worse,
don't understand it.
No, yeah.
Like I didn't know I was being ostracized by kids because I lived in an apartment. Yeah. I was the only kid who lived in an apartment where everybody else had a house and had two parents. I didn't know at the time that was a big deal, and it isn't nowadays. But in those days,
but it was, and especially there.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but
yeah.
But as I got older and out of the private dance studio situation, then yeah, I had teachers that definitely were that way.
Exactly. So yeah, well, and I think this that all moral leaders and moral leadership ties into kindness is that if you can't become a good person through example, then how can you? You know, if you were raised by really bad, mean people or raised by teachers and bad people or whatever, then chances are it would have taken a tremendous amount of character to get up out of that and to become a better person. People, I think kindness is something that pays forward. And so when you speak of kindness, when you carry yourself with kindness and assuredness and a sense of calm, relaxed positivity, people are going to see that Gandhi in you, and they're going to cling to that. It's going to attract the right people, but be careful with that because, yeah, sometimes people can get too clingy, and it's not that we want to be mean or rude to them. We just have to make sure that they're not, they can't exploit us, or they can't take advantage of us, or they get a little too clingy. You know, we have to be careful with that too. But moral leaders, yeah, I think we're becoming a bigger society. There's 100,000 channels on the tube. There's a million things to listen to, podcasts, YouTube, etc. We're becoming so diverse, and in a way that makes us more aware, but also it seems that we can't all get on the same page now. We're not all dealing with the same set of facts. We're not all dealing with the same set of information. And so at the end of the day, you can have a million different people with a million different ways about them. But at the end of the day, I think that's what's so universal about kindness is that you can come from a million different ways and different places, but arrive at the same destination. The destination is doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Okay. So we're almost done here. Almost done. I got a couple more here. So the last thing I have here is watch out for false prophets. Now, I'm doing a lot of research right now on portals, and in doing so, I ran into a video by this woman. She seemed really nice, don't get me wrong, but she looks like one of those new age types of women who has a YouTube channel who is talking about how you can connect to these portals and how your energy. She does very much the similar thing of what I do, but the difference being is that I don't claim to be a master, and I don't claim to have supernatural abilities to connect with the other side. She is a practicing Wiccan. She's a practicing spiritualist. And while I have nothing against you guys practicing witchcraft or spiritualism or quote unquote pseudoscience, sometimes we can tap into these energies and it can be a quite empowering thing. And that's how you could become a spiritualist or a shaman. So I'm not saying, immediately discard or discount the information that you get from people like that. But the difference between her and myself, for example, is that, yes, I claim to be an empath, and I tell you guys the mechanisms in which why I have it, but I don't claim to be a master witch or a master Wiccan or anything like that. Be careful who you follow, because at the end of the day, I mean, she has 37,000 views on most of her videos, and so she's quite well known. And I think she probably has some great information out there. But what I'm sorry to say this, but I was getting you are full of shit, lady, in all of that, and not because she's teaching spiritualism or Wicca or energy work or things like that, I kind of go into that territory sometimes as well. But because she had this energy and aura about her of excellence, of mastery, none of us are masters at pseudoscience because it's not proven yet.
Yeah. Well, and like the false prophet thing and the way she was speaking in terms of things of absolutes about things that are not absolutes.
Right.
That are
still very much in question.
Yeah, exactly.
When I talk about energy as intention and I talk about ghosts and I talk about the ether, or the spirit realm, I am giving you guys my interpretation of what I've learned as an empath, but I don't claim to have some mastery over that realm like she is.
And that's what you do have to be careful for, is people that speak as experts on things there's really no mastery of.
She's acting like a spiritual master. She has spiritual mastery over the ether world.
Yeah.
And exactly. I'm sorry, you can't do that.
Yeah, well, and it's
that doesn't mean you can't practice it. That doesn't mean you can't enjoy that world. That doesn't mean that you can't be what she is. But I'm getting a sense of ego and arrogance because she's a YouTuber. She's coming off like a master Wiccan or a master witch, when really, at the end of the day, you cannot have mastery of a realm that hasn't even, not only has it not been proven, but also it is so... We're still learning about these things, you guys. So at the end of the day, I'm not saying don't dabble. I'm saying if you dabble, don't claim to be a high priest if you're not a high priest.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all.
And just change the wording a little bit. This is what I feel happens. This is my take on
this. This is what I think has happened. This is what I think is going on there.
Yeah.
Right. And that's how I avoid a lot of, you know, there's no legal problem. She's not lying per se, but she's talking in absolutes where there are no absolutes, and I have a problem with that. And what that does is it takes a lot of Wiccans and dabbling witches and dabbling spiritualists and dabbling New Ageists and dabbling empaths and psychics to follow her, and it tricks people into believing they're experts when they're not.
Yeah.
And that is deception. And when we deceive ourselves that way, we cannot continue learning and growing. I was always attracted to women who are more attractive than they knew. And I had this girlfriend in high school, and she was very cute. Cute personality, cute looking, etc., right? But the moment it changed for me was the moment she started knowing she was too cute, and she would just, the way she acted, even my other friend, she was like, what is going on with, I won't say her name, but what's going on with so-and-so? You know, she's really, it's like she's cute, but she knows it now, and it's killing the cute. So if you know, and that's the thing. So when you are into spiritualism, when you are a practicing warlock or witch, there's nothing wrong with practicing these things, but be careful when to call yourself a high priest if you're not a high priest. Be careful if your house is haunted and you're calling ghost hunting groups and somebody claims they're a ghost hunting expert. Now, I do occasionally refer to myself as a dabbling expert of sorts, but I don't claim to have mastery over a world that cannot be mastered.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
I might have familiarity in the paranormal. I may have familiarity in psychics and mediumship. I may have some great familiarity in being an empath, and I try to teach that as just one individual talking to other individuals. But when you start creating that hierarchy, that's where I have a problem, because now you're talking about like a black belt in karate versus a white belt in karate. See, you can master karate because there's definitive things you have to do to show that mastery. What do you do as a master in a high priestess? You lady have literally created a psychic link to the ether and have visited other worlds? And if so, prove it. That's all I say.
Yeah.
If you really have that much sorcery in you, then prove it. Because if not, you're talking about a lot of unproven pseudoscience. And while we talk about pseudoscience and dabble in the mystical all the time because it's fun, be careful where you place all of your trust, because maybe she's just has a very high opinion of her worth. And maybe she has a connection to that world. Maybe she doesn't. Maybe she just has a connection to her arrogance. We don't know. I will have to explore her channel some more and try to see where she's coming from. Perhaps there's a lot of great advice there. And I'm not trying to, you know, shit on her abilities. What I'm saying is that when people claim to be experts or masteries of things that have, you can't, it's infinite. You cannot be master of something infinite. That's why we, when you call a doctor or a professor, you say you're practicing medicine. You're still practicing. You can never be an expert. You can never, ever become perfect at it. That's why it's a practice. You're practicing. Practice makes perfect. The more you do it, the better you get at it. And I'm sure she's got some validation there. I'm not saying she doesn't. I'm simply saying that perhaps, though, that she's deceiving people for her own financial and validation gains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that happens a lot. You do see that a lot.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'm all into mysticism, and I'm all into, but I also have told you guys, I'm very skeptical about the healing power of rocks, or the healing power of crystals, or the healing power of energy. If your dad is having a heart attack and you think you can faith heal his ass to health, think again, get his ass to the hospital, you know? Yeah. So there are dangers in, we can heal through good intentions. We can align chakras. We can heal people's spirit through, the power of energy work and positivity. We can get rid of anxieties and certain things in people. We can help people grow and center and do all these great things through the healing power of energy and intention. That being said, I'm not going to ever, if I tell you guys that I'm a master of energy work, then I'm lying to you. Because now that doesn't mean that I might not slip and say I'm an expert of the paranormal. I'm saying that for expedience sake, that I'm a researcher of the paranormal, and that I practice and I research it a lot, and therefore I've become very accustomed to that world. But because there's no hierarchy there, there's no school to go to, at the end of the day, it's self-professed. And so I don't mind that people are getting into this work and they get better and they may perhaps master these things. But at the end of the day, how can you honestly master a world that we don't know that much about, frankly? Yeah. Because she was talking about like how she could create a portal, enter that portal to the other realm, and it would blast her off to different dimensions. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe she's entirely full of shit. Or maybe she's, you know, dreaming these things. Or maybe, like myself, she's dabbled. I've briefly, myself, been in the ethereal world, and it freaked me out, and I got home to my body. I have astral projected exactly one time in my life. I was a younger man. It freaked me the fuck out. But I wanted to explore more and learn more about it. But since then, the closest I've come to repeating that is trying to leave my body during an episode of sleep paralysis, but I just end up waking up. So at the end of the day, we don't know what that ethereal world is. We don't know whether we can die if we become untethered to our physical bodies. But at the end of the day, it's all fascinating, and I think there's a lot of good work we can do to help people and learn about the spiritual nature of life and energy. But when we start creating hierarchies around it and diplomas and self-professed mastery, I just say, watch it. Chances are you're talking about someone who craves validation and mastery more so than they actually have.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you just have to be
careful. She seemed like a nice lady.
Though. Yeah, she did.
But so I don't want to. Mm-hmm. I'd say who she is because I don't want to poo-poo on her because she seems... Mm-hmm. I want to actually explore her YouTube channel and see where she's gone with it all. And that's the thing, you guys, is keep shining, Keep on. No, just keep learning, keep growing. If you want to learn Wicca, if you want to learn witchcraft, if you want to learn voodoo or any dark art or any energy work type of thing, anything that we would consider ethereal or supernatural, I would say do it. You can really grow spiritually as a person by doing that. But at the end of the day, be careful. Be careful where you land, because we can trick ourselves into believing all kinds of things that may or may not be valid. And maybe she is valid, and I've yet to become a believer. Maybe I'll become a believer. Or the more likely scenario is that people who claim to have, you know, I'll leave you with this. Okay. So my dad told me about that author, and maybe you've heard of her, Sylvia Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Sylvia Brown, if you don't know, is a psychic medium, and she's written a bunch of books. And she is a, you know, God-fearing woman. And she tells in great detail her astral trips to the other side, where she has gotten a chance to view heaven and what the afterlife is like. And she talks about the hierarchical relationships. She talks about the educational center of it. She talks about how you can go in there and you can learn about all the things that were going on in your life that you didn't know about. And there's a skit on SNL there. I won't go there. But but the point is, you guys, that we all want to learn the greatest understanding of life, the greatest essence of our being. And it can get very, very easy to get caught up in that. And so I, at my dad's request, he told me, read this book. It's really fascinating. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I didn't strike my dad, you know, as mm-hmm. a spiritualist in that way. But I think my dad, because he was so dealing with his demons and he hated the real world, he was looking forward to the afterlife. And I think yeah. he was trying to find ways to view the afterlife in a way that was favorable to him, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's not to say, you know, that, you know, sometimes when you have a flash or an image, that you're not being given information extrasensory. I used to have dreams when I was a kid of plane crashes that happened. But I can't sit here and tell you that it's 100% accuracy. That's the problem with it. You know, we can all be connected to that world up there, that greater ethereal plane, right, that teaches us. We can learn things from it. I truly and sincerely believe that empaths and psychics and mediums have a greater connection to that realm out there, and it informs our senses and it informs our thinking, and we can learn a lot through that. That being said, be careful, because when she talked about that, I read the whole book and I was like, that's fascinating. But the more I thought about it, the more I started seeing inconsistencies and incongruencies. And then I read some of her other books that were like completely different from her previous books. And she was starting to become sort of like she was digging herself a hole of inconsistencies, right? And so at the end of the day, you know, we've told you guys about how skeptics will disprove psychic phenomenon and things like that. And, you know, I'm not saying psychics don't exist. I do believe psychics exist, and I do believe that empaths are real, because I am one. I know it to exist. But I've also shown you guys the science behind it. There's a real, legitimate physical phenomenon going on there that gives us extrasensory perception. That being said, yes, you can get good at it. Yes, you can keep practicing it, but you're still always going to be a novice. We can never master these things. We can only continue evolving and continue getting better. So when you see people claim to be masters of something, just take it with a grain of salt. At the end of the day, I'm not saying don't learn from them, but keep learning, but be ever vigilant that you're not being duped. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
And that kind of ties into the whole compassion thing, because I believe it to be insincere when you claim to be more than you are.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm an empath. I didn't say I was an empath master.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I'm a practicing empath. I practice it. I'm learning about it. I'm trying to, I call myself that, but I don't, there's no hierarchy. There's no community, really, other than the empath tribe that I'm trying to start, because it's a movement that I think needs more people to understand it. Because once we start learning more about the human experience, the more we can start understanding how to create our mind body experience into something more evolved, something more supernatural, if you will, to learn more about it. That's what the band Tool is all about. It's about the metaphysical world, that how we transition from mind to altered state of consciousness to that being some form of supernatural, energetic transcendentalism, if you will. Okay. Nothing wrong with practicing all that, but be careful when you see other agendas, especially money-making agendas, especially popularity contests, anything, you know, I'm not here to become, you know, your superior. I am here to become a teacher and a guide and a friend. That's all. And I don't make any money at this yet. Yeah. And if I do make money, it's only to help empaths, not to, you know, I'm not trying to create a hierarchical structure from that. Like, oh, I'm the top of the pyramid, while all of you are way down there, the bottom of the pyramid.
Yeah.
It's like a pyramid scheme. It's like we've all sort of become okay with hierarchy, and yes, that's okay when it's a somebody who's mastered a physical thing. Like, if you're a colonel or a general in the army, yes, pay reverence to older folks. Yes, pay reverence to more experienced folks. But at the end of the day, also know your own worth, and also don't surrender your value to so-called masters. You know, when I was, you know, I haven't told anyone this, but when I was young, I was very much getting involved in spiritualism with my uncle. But over time, I learned that he was full of shit, that I was being misled by a drug addict who thought he had supernatural gifts. But what it turned out he had was a very high opinion of himself and wanted to have mastery of that world, because in real life, he had been failing. He was a failure. And so he was trying to give himself credit and validation, perhaps where he wasn't always necessarily deserved. And so...
And I think that's very common.
Yeah.
In like cult leaders and,
right,
and things. That's,
right.
Yeah, that's how they go about it.
Right. And I'm not saying don't learn from these folks, but just be leery when someone claims to have mastery over something that you can't master. We're practicing, we're learning, we're growing, but mastery, that's quite another thing. Now, that doesn't mean that if they call themselves a master, that's like I've said, it's okay. If you're not sure you're an empath, but you think you're an empath, yeah, call yourself an empath. It's okay. But just be careful when people call themselves masters or when they call themselves something, because at the end of the day, perhaps they've mastered it, perhaps they have not. Maybe they're dabblers, perhaps they're in that world, and that's fine. That's fine. I'm okay with that. You know, our friend Idris, she's a practicing witch, but she's never told me she was a master witch.
No.
How could you be?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you could literally prove that you're Gandalf, you know, be careful what you espouse is all. Be humble. You know, if you're getting good at the ethereal arts, hey, great, that's terrific. But just don't let your ego take you away from a greater sense of humility. That's all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you guys, that's what we have for you today. You know, the spirit of kindness is simple. It's not brain science. It's do the right thing. Don't be fooled by people who, you know, trick you into being mean and rude. Society can trick you into all kinds of temporary attitudes. And I think at the end of the day, do the right thing. Be generous with your time. And like I've said before, be teachable. If you think you know everything, you're never going to open yourself up energetically to being receptive to more information. That's what happens to a lot of arrogant people. That's what happened to my uncle. That's what happens to a lot of people out there who just, they reach a certain level and then they just simply stop. That's not to say that they didn't get high up on a level, but if you want to continue to grow as a person, you have to be receptive to your faults and receptive to change, and you have to be teachable. If you think you know everything, you're going to stop learning and growing.
Yeah, it's true.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So. Anyways, yeah, but what? Any final flicking thoughts? That's a YouTube channel we watch.
Yes, it is.
The Flick Pick, John Flickinger. He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's eight.
He likes Batman like me.
Yes,
and working out. So
yeah,
he's all right.
He does. I don't know.
Yeah, it's at the end of the day, I think what it boils down to is be yourself is all you can do. Audio Slave once said that. Chris Cornell. But be yourself. Be humble. Be teachable. Know your worth. But don't be glamored into ugly mentalities that aren't going anywhere. Because at the end of the day, if you want the world to be a better place, you know, we all should be pitching in. If you don't pitch in, then it's kind of like what I said is people who become a part of anti-movements, like the people who, like, we were trying to boycott gasoline because gas prices were upwards of $5. We were trying to create a movement where every Tuesday people didn't get gas, and that helps, lower the cost of gas. An entire anti-movement was created out of that, where people were going only on Tuesday to get gas because they thought it was so fucking funny to be anti that movement because they wanted to be non-conformist. But they don't understand. You're paying $5 in gas too, dumb motherfucker. Like, we're trying to better the world. And so never become a part of a counterculture that is trying to worsen progress, worsen good cheer, worsen best practices. When you do that, I mean, be a part of a counterculture, be a part, you know, think independently, know your own worth and power. But at the end of the day, I mean, gosh, you know, don't become a part of a culture that's only going to make society worse and uglier.
Just be a good person.
Yeah. That's rocket science.
What it boils down to.
Exactly. Yeah. So, anyways, you got anything else for us, baby?
Nope, that was it.
All right, you guys.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. I could have shortened the show into one sentence. Don't be a dick. My religion is don't be a dickism. But anyways, thank you guys. Next episode is going to be about portals. Portals, you guys. I want to talk about the different kinds of portals. And then we're going to talk about EVPs. And we're going to talk again about the spirit world, that ether out there, whatever you want to call it, the spiritual realm, and how we connect to it, and how, what is that, and why is that? And then we're going to talk about EVPs and some of ghost hunting evidence based on some theories I have that I want to talk about when it comes to different kinds of portals. I have some thoughts about that. So that's what we'll have for you next time in a day or two. In the meantime, I've got plenty of episodes. I've got, 48 episodes, I think, now? Almost?
Something like that.
47, I think? Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, there's plenty to chew on there. But thank you guys for joining me, and thank you for being a part of my Empath Tribe. If you ever want to reach out to us, please do so, man. Instagram, Spooky Nerdy Gal for Rebecca, and for myself, yeah, it's easy. At Chef Bright Comedy, or simply search Surviving Empathy Podcast. You'll find me. I'm out there in the ether.
Yeah.
Thanks, you guys. I couldn't get the word out.
I heard that.
Let's try one more time. Thanks, you guys. Have a good one. We love you, and have a good day.